Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 65. We're covering the 2019 Valspar Championship on the PGA Tour and the Maybank Championship on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Steve. How's things? Enjoy the players?
Yeah, good. It was all right, mate.
Yeah, it's good.
I enjoyed it. I didn't like Tommy's body language, but...
At very least, he got that up and down on 17 to make sure he got a full each way.
If he hadn't got a full place, I would have been slitting my wrist. And when he was on 17 tee, I just shouted at the TV, "Do not hit it in the water." And I could tell from his eyes where that was heading.
Yeah, it was an aggressive line he took, wasn't it?
Well, you've got to give him credit for that, isn't it? Did I see a statistic about he's led 10 times and never won?
Yeah, he's going.
I'm sure Dave Tindall shouted that on Twitter.
That'll change, won't it? He's too good a player. He's right up there with a lot of the top players nowadays.
We can talk about this in a second, can't we? Let's just do the usual. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk. Naturally, we're available on social media. We've got so much to talk about. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting in terms of Twitter handles. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Just release one of those for the Valspar Championship. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify and a myriad of different pod channels. You can listen as well via our Golf Betting System YouTube channel. Many of you do. Naturally, subscribe and follow the podcast. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes, and naturally, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Leave your name in the review so we can read it out on the podcast. So, we've got two to read here, and Phil Elfrink of St. Louis, the United States of America, did just that. He left me his name in the review so I can read it out. Here you go, Paul. 5 stars, what a treat. I look forward to listening to you fellas every week. I listen to multiple golf betting and DFS podcasts every week, but you guys give a different take and approach. Plus, you guys cover the Euros, and that makes my degenerate synapses fire. Keep up the good work, gents. Phil, I take it you must play DraftKings. Come and join our DraftKings league at Golf Betting System, and you can take part in our European tournaments every week. Yeah. That'd be a sensible idea.
Yeah, you can come and pitch up and see if you can beat me. Which actually on DFS probably isn't particularly difficult lately. It's been a bit of a sparse run for me on DraftKings, I must say. But yeah, pop along, join the GBS group. And
we have links in the description box. So just come and see them, Phil. Come and play our European tour. Well, come and play both PGA Tour and European Tour leagues at Golf Betting System. Now, we've got a second review. This one is from a gentleman. Well, it's C. Thrain. I don't know if that's Thrain or Thrainy. But leave your name in the reviews and it makes it a lot easier. He's from Denmark, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Great listen, 5 stars. Super interesting discussion of stats, form and history. Plus, it is very teaching on golf course layouts, grasses, etc. Would be cool if you throw in a little reflection on previous week. If the stats is off or if you just picked the wrong horse. Smiley face. That's from C. Thrain in Denmark. It's usually because our selections are potentially the wrong horse. Although with you, I mean... This brings us into our review of last week. Is it my imagination? You've had 3 runners-up in the last 5 sets of previews.
Mm. Yeah, it's getting a bit painful now, isn't it? So, going back to the Super Six. Actually, I had a couple of the players in position there.
Yeah, you got 2 in the semis, didn't you?
Yeah, and
Paul Dunn and.
I'm thinking Nacho. I'm thinking Nacho Alvira. It wasn't Alvira.
That's right.
It
was, Alvira.
Then Campillo the week before last, and then Louis Diego last week, who had a four-shot lead halfway, didn't he? And he looked outstanding. And I don't know. I switched the TV on Saturday morning, having seen some great golf from him over the first couple of days. And
bogeyed the first.
Yeah, he missed a short one on the first, and it just seemed to rattle him. And you know, that whole front nine, to be fair, I think he finished the front nine one over. And it could have been far, far worse. But by that point, he's missed out on a number of the scoring holes, and clearly he's not feeling, you know, he's not feeling the top of his confident game at that point, and meandered through the rest of the round. And then Saturday again, he had some chances. Sunday had some chances on Sunday, didn't he? Got himself into the lead, tied for the lead, got the outright lead at one point, I think, on the sixth hole, seventh hole, something like that. But just couldn't make those putts coming home. It was all a bit frustrating, which is the name of this game, but he was super close, wasn't he?
How many players at that level, though, do you see go gun to gun? It's
there's a pressure, isn't it?
It's rare, and it's rare. The standard of players, it's every week seems the same. You've got 10, 12, 15 players that could all win it on the Sunday, and they're just passing the potato, aren't they? Oh, I can't win it. You have a go.
It's funny.
I thought the Italian chap was actually quite impressive in the end.
The way he closed out on 18, yeah, you know, just smashed down the fairway, hit the pin, didn't he, with his approach, and just mopped it up at the end. But yeah, he was impressive, given that, you know, he clearly got some Alps tour experience, and, you know, he'd done well as an amateur as well. But if you look at his form on the European tour, the Challenge Tour, nothing there. I think his best on the European Tour was 26th. I think his best on the Challenge Tour was 18th, something like that. So there wasn't anything to grab onto. He was 300-1 in places before the event, if you managed to pluck him out. But I can't imagine many people did, to be honest. But yeah, he was impressive. Adrian Els was super impressive. Again, he tightened up a bit, didn't he, on Sunday? You know, and you could see. What impressed me most is that although he's an incredibly long hitter of the ball, he knows, and you know, working with his caddy, very experienced caddy, he knows when to rein back a little bit and take an iron off the tee, get himself into position, and he's going to win. He's going to win some events. He's going to win some good events, I think, Arnaus. So he was impressive. Again, Justin Harding, it flew through, didn't he? He just ambled along for the first eight or nine holes on Sunday, and then started making his birdies. And you know, he was only a shot back in the end. So there's a few eye catchers there, but yeah, just disappointment really that Diego couldn't finish the job off at 60-1.
He gave it a go on the last. That putt burnt the edge, didn't it? He did fly the ball all the way to the pin.
Yep.
So I think the effort he made on 18 was decent. But I think all in all, you can't really complain, can you? You're there or thereabouts. What's your record like at the Maybank? Any good?
Trying to think back now to events. There's nothing. It changed, didn't it? Because we've got the Maybank, and it used to be the Malaysian Maybank Malaysian Open. So there was a slightly different event going back historically. But then they used to play that at a different track as well. So you've got some different nuances with this particular event. But yeah,
I always remember Sung Yul No winning a Malaysian.
Yeah, that was
years and years, beating KJ Choi.
Yeah, that was the previous event. So
many years
ago. Again, it was in Kuala Lumpur, but it was on a different, shorter track. But yes, it's I can't recall having nabbed the winner of this particular one. But then we've only got a couple of years worth of course history, so
let's talk players and Masters first, because people want to talk about the Masters, don't they?
Yeah, not long,
because we're very, very close now, very close indeed. Now, one of the stats that I brought out to the party in our Masters anti-post podcast, which is still available, was this par four birdie or better stat that seems to come in year after year. So I thought I'd just run through the top 10 again. Because the last 5 years, the winner of the Masters has been in the top seven of this particular statistic. So let me run through the top 10 in reverse. Justin Rose is now up into the top 10 at 10. I feel like should have that that music. If you're listening to this in America, you haven't got a clue, or in Denmark, what I'm talking
about. No, if you're younger than about 30, you've probably got no idea either.
I love it. They still have that on the radio too.
Oh, really?
On a Saturday, yeah, it's great. Right, top 10. Justin Rose is up from 13 at 10. Rory McIlroy's at 8. He's tied with Patrick Cantlay. This is par 4 birdie or better leaders. 7, Ryan Palmer. Well, he won't be playing the Masters unless he wins in Houston. And to be fair, I won't be backing Ryan Palmer if he's in the field.
Mm.
6, down from 4, Jason Day. Now, that's one I am interested in. 5, Ricky Fowler, down from up from 7. 4, down from 6, Justin Thomas. 3, Rafa Cabrera-Bello. 2, Tyrrell Hatton. That won't be 2 after this week because he's playing Valspar.
That's scuppered.
He'll be about 86 in the stats next week. He'll win it, clearly, because I've said that. Number 1, Phil Lefty Mickelson. So if I was a betting man, not that I am, clearly, I'd be backing Mickelson and probably Jason Day on that basis.
Right now, yeah. You've got another 3 weeks or so to see how that changes.
We have, yes. Just to... Cam Smith fell out of the top 10 last week. He's falling backwards. Siwoo Kim's falling backwards. Tony Finau made a big jump last week from 30 to 18, so he's heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and he's going to...
Doesn't play this week, and I'm not sure he'll play at Shell either, so...
He's
unlikely. The one that is creeping up from 62 to 22 was Dustin Johnson last week.
Mm.
Never backed the world number one at the Masters. There you go, there's another one for you. For those interested, and I'm sure you will be, Tiger Woods has jumped into the stats at 33. Sergio Garcia at 40. There isn't the one that I want in there. That's the trouble. We've still got a couple of weeks to go. Gary Woodland's just on the fringes this week.
There'll be lots of changes.
He's at 12. If he had a good week on the par fours this week, I could see Woodland up in the top 7 or 8.
The thing with this week is birdie or better on the par fours at the Valspar isn't going to be...
No, it's tough, mate.
They're not going to be a lot of them, are they? So you're going to see quite a few changes from...
So you might find Hatton, your spotter, mate, you might find Hatton, RCB, even Jason Day dropping out of that.
Mm.
And then just underneath that top 7, we've got, clearly, Cantlay, McIlroy, Rose, got JB Holmes, Gary Woodland, who is playing this week, Abraham Anser, who I was going to tip up and then decided to withdraw. So thank you for that, Abraham. At least he had the decency to do it before the event, rather than Jason Day the other week. And there's, you know, it's just players like Kim, Charles Howe, Tony Finau. So Finau's one to watch there. If he creeps up, you never know. Never know. But there aren't... Because we're talking about juicy underlings for the Masters, aren't we? And there's no one there that's really jumping off the page saying I'd... The only one is Phil.
Yep.
And I tip him up every year. And he actually started well last year. And then he absolutely... I think the wind got up a little bit and he just did what Phil does. He's shooting double bogeys everywhere. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
What did you think of the players?
I love it as an event. I do really enjoy it as an event. And
do you think it's the fifth major? It doesn't feel like it to me when I watch it.
No, it's just a very, very good PGA Tour event. But I thoroughly enjoy it. We talked about some of the outsiders that I fancied last week, and Furyk and Vegas, and I had a little dabble on them both, and both of them looked like they got a great chance, didn't they? Right at the end, you know, flew through the field at the end, and Vegas missed a 6-footer at the end for what would have been 15 under. Obviously, Jimbo got himself into that 15 under position, but fair play to Rory, you know, for the stick that he's taken over the last couple of months or so for not being able to convert these chances. The way he played 16, 17, and then eventually 18, just closed it out, didn't he? Very
he goes on to that list, though, doesn't he? He goes on to that list that we read out last week of March players' events, where people have literally banging you over the back of the head with a top seven of a finish in a Florida event, building up to the Players.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the fact, you know, the likes of Schauffele and all these guys, Cantlay, that hadn't played since Mexico, hadn't played any Bermuda, any Florida Golf, missed the cut.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important factor. I thought Dustin Johnson's performance was interesting last week as well, because that March timeline clearly suited him. A little bit more moisture on the course, was a little bit more. I think slowly, I'm not even sure if it's slowly, he's got to the point now where he's a kind of all-rounder. Clearly he's world number one, but he doesn't take driver everywhere anymore.
No.
And that clearly came out last week.
Yeah.
Because when he went birdie, was it three straight or three out of four at the start? You're thinking, all the guys in the back two groups were hitting it everywhere. You thought he could come and steal this, because that's clearly happened the last few weeks with Molinari and the likes.
Yeah.
But he just ran out of steam a little bit. He missed a lot of short putts. Actually, Dustin Johnson last week.
Yeah, but he's looking good. His long game's looking good, as you say, and we know that he's very dangerous when that's the case. While we're talking players, congratulations to Ben Cobb, who won our competition last week. The final number of balls in the water for the 17th hole was 45, and it played exactly to level par over the course of the 4 days. And Ben guessed 45 and plus seven was his guess, which was the closest answer. So congrats, Ben. We've been in contact, and your £50 free bet with competition sponsors Betfred is winding its way to you shortly. So it's good stuff.
Fantastic. Well done, Ben. What did you think to Rahm and Fleetwood there?
Rahm, we've talked at length about Rahm, haven't we? And about, you know,
we know the score.
In an easier or a more scorable contest, he thrives, I think. And when it gets tough, and when the birdies aren't as freely available, I think he struggles a little bit, whether it's mentally or.
He can't play middle of the green golf.
Too aggressive.
Can he?
He
aims at the pin every shot.
Yeah.
And you know, there's certain tournaments, certain times in tournaments when you can't do that, and he hasn't learnt that yet.
No.
It'll come. And you could tell that his temperament was better. He wasn't thrashing out and shouting and all this, but it's not quite there at the moment. It will come.
Yeah. No, Tommy's playing some very good golf again, and he's not a million miles away. It's a shame, because at the halfway point, you and I both had the leader in our respective events, and it could have been looking like a juicy double, but alas, it wasn't.
I had Poulter in third as well. What happened to Poulter?
Yeah, he had an awful weekend.
I read something about some abuse that was being shouted at him, and
he's got to be used to it.
It upset him because he had his wife and his kids following him.
Right. Yeah, well, they've got under his skin then, haven't they? But he should be used to that. He's always taken a bit of stick from the American crowds, hasn't he?
Mm.
But yeah, not nice when you've got your family.
I thought he had a real chance. I thought he had a massive chance, actually.
Yeah, halfway again, as you say, he was right in the mix, wasn't he?
I think he threw a quad in there on one early on Saturday, so that was gone.
That doesn't help, does it?
No, not a winner. Right. So we've spoken about the Players, we've spoken about the Masters. Let's talk about the Maybank Championship.
Mm. Yeah, so
your event this week over in Malaysia.
Yeah, it's a fairly decent one in the context of the European Tour. So we're off to Malaysia, the capital of Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, for what is the fourth Maybank Championship, the third of which is being played at this venue. So if you go back for the three that have been played so far, 2016 Marcus Fraser won on a different track at 175-1. 2017, when the event moved here, Fabrizio Zanotti won at 225-1. Two massive, juicy prices. And then last year, Shubhankar Sharma won at 50-1 off the back of some pretty indifferent form, but then he'd won the Joburg Open at the back end of the previous year, so there'd been more than a hint that he was playing some decent golf. So yeah, we've got a little bit of course warm from the last couple of years, and there's some more distant events from some more distant Malaysian events that were played here at Saujana Golf and Country Club, which we've included in the stats on the site for this week's event. So looking at the field, we had a few withdrawals, as I know you've had over in the Valspar as well. So Joost Louten was due to be playing this, but he's pulled out. So that's left Thomas Peters at the top of the market again for the umpteenth time that he's played on the European Tour in the last few weeks. At 14-1, generally is a little bit of 16-1 out there, but I suspect he'll go off at 14-1. Jorge Campillo, who I backed a week before last, 18-1. And he's finished second on his last two starts, Campillo. He finished second here last year
as
well.
He's never won. He's 20-1.
Yeah, 18-1 at best price. So, you could take your chance and go for the Campillo heartache if you fancy that.
I think Joost knows he's going to be playing in the World Match.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's sitting at 67th, I think, in the OWGR. So there's always two or three or four people who pull out, isn't there?
He must have been given. He's been given the heads up.
I think he's been given the nod. Yeah, I think he's done the maths and worked out.
Get yourself over to Texas, lad. You're in the World Match play.
Yeah, there's no value in playing the Maybank when you've got a far bigger prize for turning up and playing the match play, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Mike Lorenzo Vera, 25-1. Ryan Fox, who was third last year, 25-1. Fabrizio Zanotti, who won in 2017, 25-1. And then you're down to the likes of Alexander Bjork, Adrian Else, who's going to be a popular pick for the next few weeks, undoubtedly, 33-1. Thomas Dietrich, Scrivener, Jordan Smith, all around that same kind of price as well. So
it's a good European Tour field, this one.
Yes, it's solid, isn't it?
Solid, yeah.
Solid is probably the right word. There's no, aside from Thomas Peters at the top, there's no real superstars there, but we're not scraping the barrel in terms of terms of the field. So yeah, all pretty good. And the Palm Course is where we're playing at Saujana Golf and Country Club, which is a 7,135-yard par 72. It's dubbed the Cobra, is the nickname for the track, but I don't think it really plays to with that level of bite to give it the nickname. But we shall see. Lined with palm
trees. You like a cobra or three, didn't you? you knew I was going to say
over a curry. Yeah,
you like a cobra, don't you?
Yeah, one or two.
Yeah. Maybe your golf improves after a cobra or two.
But yeah, I don't know about my golf, but darts improves after a cobra or two.
Yeah,
I'll give you that.
Definitely helps with the elbow. Yeah.
Indeed. Lined with palm trees, par threes, all around the 200-yard mark. Four par fives between 523 and 604, and five sub 400-yard par fours. And it's not massively dissimilar to last week, really. It's a classical kind of track. Slightly different in that it's quite fiddly. It's small, undulating Tiff Eagle Bermuda greens this week. So if you're trying to draw some comparisons, you might want to look at courses like Fanling for the Hong Kong Open, which is another kind of classical-style fiddly track with Bermuda greens as well. And I say, despite the nickname, the course isn't really that tough. You look at Sharma's winning score, 21 under last year. Fabrizio Zanotti was 19 under. If you go back to the Malaysian Open days from 2020 or 2009 backwards, so Kang won at 17, Anthony Kang that is, in 2009, 2007, Peter Hedblom. I remember being on Hedblom actually back in 2007 in my formative days with golf punting. And Tongchai Jaidee, 2005 and 2004, he won it back to back at 21 under and 14 under respectively. And for me, it's a kind of track that lends itself to a more controlled tee to green game. Someone who can putt well on Bermuda greens as well. They are quite small greens, and if you're comfortable putting on that style of green, then I think you're going to be at a distinct advantage. And if you look through the stats of the last few years where we've got data to analyse, then a lot of the best putters on the week did gravitate towards the top of the leaderboard. So that would be one of the key angles I would look at personally for this particular event. Incoming formal winners, you've tended to get decent price winners here because they've not shown a massive amount of form. I mean, we talked about Sharma a second ago. His previous two events, 48th and 61st coming into this. He had one at the back end of the previous year, but hadn't done much in the Middle East prior to winning here. 50-1, and I know it was a little bit longer than that. He'd been tipped up quite heavily for this as well last year, as I recall. Zanotti came off the back of a couple of missed cuts. Anthony Kang, going back to 2009, 49th missed cut. Peter Hedblom, 41st, 54th. It was only Jaidi who had shown some very immediate form coming into this, and you're going all the way back to 2004, 2005 to draw that comparison.
Where would Sharma's win been the four outings before? It must have been the end of the previous season.
Yeah, it was the Joburg Open. But it was on a different track. They used to play at the Royal Kensington, but they'd moved the track to, top of my head, Rand Park, rings a bell. Don't quote me on that. But yes, he had won at the Joburg Open just before Christmas. And then, hadn't done a great deal in the golf.
No, Zanotti's form was wild, wasn't it? It was just nothing there. It was like a 16 miscut.
It's funny, Zanotti, because I think he's done that two or three times now on the European Tour. And you always get a good price with him. And he can win. He can go over the line. But
not at 25-1 when he's actually done something recently.
No. You're far better picking him out when he's got a string of miscuts or seemingly poor events. But
goes like Torbjorn.
Yeah. And then he turns up at an event or a track that seems to suit his game, and for whatever reason, it all just clicks and away you go.
Yeah. Okay. So he's actually showing far too good form at the moment.
And the price is, if you're talking, he's as short as 18-1. I'm looking at now, and he's been backed in as well. So.
I can see your logic of why you've gone for your guys then. Because there's not a lot, there's some immediate form just under the surface. But I was surprised at the prices you've got on your tips this week. Because for me, they're players that are just equally as good as some of these guys that are far shorter.
Yeah, I looking at the history of this, and you've got Sharma, who was 50-1, but you could have made a case for him. I'm sure Steve Palmer tipped him up last year. So clearly there's some logic to be grabbed in, from him. And we talked about Zanotti, who won here, a long price as well. And, I don't really see the value in going down at even the second tier players, the 18, 22, 33-1 players. I couldn't really find anyone who really interested me. I mean, I do think Arnaus is going to win something, and I think we've got to pick him on the right week, but it doesn't really feel that this is going to be the right kind of track for him. If we were taking him to the Hong Kong Open right now, I wouldn't be backing him, and I can't be backing him this week, I don't think, but it'll be interesting to see how he fares. I mean, the player the shortest price player that I've backed is David Lipsky. And there's still a little bit of 50-1 about him at the moment. Again, he's been backed in, so I suspect he'll go off at about 40-1 top price. Very early, there was some 66s about him as well, which was a very strong price. The reason he's been priced at that kind of level is because he missed his last two cuts, but prior to that, there's some decent form there to grab onto. I mean, with Kurt Kitayama, we've already seen a player win twice this season. And Lipsky did win at the back end of last year, the start of this wraparound season, at the Dunhill Championship at Leopard Creek. That was his second win on the European Tour, the other one being at Crown Saucier. So again, if we're talking short, fiddly, kind of classical-style tracks, again, I think the Crown's form can translate to some degree. There's been some decent efforts in since that win. 16th Abu Dhabi, 24th in Saudi. He went to the WGC at Mexico and finished 10th there, which, in the context of this field, is an outstanding piece of form. And then went to Oman and on debut missed the cut. Went to Qatar, where he's always struggled, missed the cut. And since that, his price has drifted out to, as I say, 50-1 right now. So I couldn't resist that. I thought that was a very strong price. And looking at his course form here, second in 2017, where he was fourth for putting, 17th last year, where he was third for total driving. Got some Hong Kong form as well. He's finished fifth in 2016. Again, looking at Sharma finished ninth and sixth again this year, just gone. at Hong Kong, so I think there's some strong correlation there. And going back to another track that I think has got some relevance, the championship at Laguna National back in 2014 is another one of these classical style Bermuda Green tests, and he finished second there. And that was when we didn't know much about Lipski whatsoever. And the only reason he lost that week was Philippe Aguilar hold his second shot on the 72nd hole to win by one. I was on. I was on Anders Hansen, who was also tied for second, and it's like a tale of woe me going through my golf
that's
history.
That's just us in general. Listeners know that by now, Paul.
Tale of woe. But yes, I think Lipski's the one that's going to buck that trend and get me the win this week, I think. Other players.
He's a proven European Tour winner, isn't he, Mr. Lipski?
Well, yeah, and I think you know that 10th place finish at a WGC, and you bring that form into an event like this.
Yeah.
On a course where he's previously finished runner up, and you know a decent effort again last year, I think there's a lot to like at that price. Other players that I've backed: Wade Ormsby, who's available at 66-1. And again, if you continue this Hong Kong link, then he's a Fanling winner from back in 2017. And that is his only European Tour win, but he's also won the Asian Tour in the past. And he actually came within a couple of holes of winning again at the Vic Open last month. And it's only a double bogey on the 71st hole that prevented him from winning.
Why don't the bookies fancy him then? I mean, why isn't he so short on the basis that his actual immediate form is very, very good?
Yeah, well, no, I think it is very good. I was surprised at the price, I must say. And 66s, I thought, was more than fair, worth taking on. And he did double bogey that hole, but he birdied the last. By that point, David Law had already got beyond him, so he needed an eagle at the last. But he birdied the last, so he didn't go completely to pot. He just had bit of bad luck, I think. His long game looks good, and that's not really where his game tends to be. He's, in my mind, is a far better short game exponent. Went to the Super 6 the week after, got himself through to the playoffs. Through the playoffs, he got himself to the final day. And if you remember, there were a few players who had their putters stolen overnight on the Saturday into the Sunday, and Ormsby was one of those. So they stole not only his putter, but also his reserve putter. So he woke up Sunday morning to play the match play element with no putter.
No.
So no surprise whatsoever that he didn't progress, because he's, you know, aside from not having his equipment, his mood must have been absolutely, he must have been absolutely fuming.
Yeah.
So, but then.
And he hasn't appeared since.
No, he hasn't appeared since, but he's gone back home. He's got his head round it. Clearly gone to the Scotty Cameron shop and got himself another couple of putters there to see him through the next few events. And we know with Ormsby that he can hold his form. And going back to when he won, he'd finished fifth the week before Valderrama, which again, we're talking tree-lined classical tracks. Won the Hong Kong Open. He was ninth at the Australian PGA the week after that. So these little peaks of form, when he finds them, he can maintain for a few events on the trot.
Yeah.
I say he's striking the ball well. I can't see any reason to not back him at 66s, I must say. And a couple of longer shots to complete the team this week. Tong Chai Jaidi, we talked about him winning twice here already. And I backed him on his last start in Qatar after he'd shot the round of the day, or the joint round of the day, to finish off in Oman the week before that. He didn't do badly in Qatar. He was kind of mid-division going into the weekend, 70-71 or 71-70 he shot, but couldn't push on from there and just didn't kind of took his foot off the pedal, I guess. But there's enough to like from prior to that. He was second after day one in Dubai, fourth for putting, which caught my eye. And even in Qatar, where he clearly didn't push on over the weekend, he still finished 23rd for putting. And that's, again, two decent Bermuda green performances which catch the eye. And these fiddly kind of tree line tests do work for him. He was eighth at Wentworth last year, which is his best result of the season. He's finished second in the past at Wentworth, going back to 2015, I think it was. 14th at Hong Kong this Christmas just gone, or just before Christmas. In fact, he's got an outstanding record in Hong Kong, full stop. He's got 12 top 20 finishes there over the years. But then it's the course form that swings it here. You know, two wins, he clearly knows how to get around the track. It has been renovated slightly since, but it's still fundamentally the same piece of land. And even when with the renovations, he's been inside the top 20 heading into the weekend the last 2 years. So there's enough to like about Jai D at 125-1. And then the final one I've gone for is Jake McLeod, the Aussie, who, again, it's another one of these...
Good young talent.
He is good young talent, yeah, 24-year-old. I'd looked at his price and, you know, given that we've seen him, he was 33-1 to win the Vic Open. He was 55-1 to win the Super Six and didn't do anything in those 2 weeks, it must be said. But he did. He was already in the WGC Mexico, so you can imagine that was on his mind. He finished 45th in Mexico. He was 16th to halfway. So at that point, you know, anything could have happened. He could have finished top 10. He could have finished in a kind of similar position to Lipsky at that point. So that WGC form is solid. He was 20th in Qatar on his last start, and he was 6th going into the Sunday. His third round, 66, was the joint best of the day. Yeah, he's shown some decent form, I think. And then he's been pushed out all the way to 150-1, which I thought was a silly price for him, really. I think he's far, far, far better than that in this field. So snap that up. Again, looking at his form, he's 6th in Fiji, won the New South Wales Open in November. So he's got that recent win under his belt, similar to Sharma did last year. 3rd at the Australian Open, it was. 2nd after day one of the Saudi International. So there's lots of snippets of recent enough form to like. And it's his putting that really kind of swings it for me again. He's finished top 5 for putting in 5 of his last 8 recordable starts, which I think is going to be an important factor this week. 7th for driving accuracy last week.
He's certainly a guy that's been atop of leaderboards recently.
Yeah,
McLeod.
Yeah, I think he can.
He's clearly a precocious talent.
There's enough to like about him to chance drama 150-1. I think, and he's got no course form. He's got no regional form. I couldn't find any form from Malaysia whatsoever in his professional career. But you know,
doesn't matter.
I don't know. They've only been playing this particular track or this particular event, you know, in recent times for the last couple of years. I don't think he's at a massive disadvantage. And
Australian, yeah?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Do you know what part of Australia he hails from?
Either Adelaide or Queensland. I forget which of the two.
Because I always think Cameron Smith, because Cameron Smith's he's a Gold Coast boy, a Queensland. He's Adelaide, isn't he? Adelaide boy. And his form translated across to the Asian Tour very, very well.
I think it can, you know, and it's got to be hot and sticky out there, you know.
Exactly.
It's not going to be completely alien to him, you know. If you put in some of the Northern Hemisphere guys on there who, yeah, they clearly are exposed to some of these some of the hotter temperatures, but they're not going to be thoroughly comfortable in it. And some of these guys are going to be far more equipped to be able to handle the conditions. So yeah, that's my 4 against the field this week, and fingers crossed we can snare the winner out of one of those 4.
I do like your strategy this week. As soon as I read your tips last night, I thought, yeah, he's on a very good wavelength here.
It feels comfortable. It does feel comfortable. Yeah, we'll see. Let's say there's some players there that you could make a case for, but we'll give it a stab with those 4.
One player that jumped out at me at a big price, 125-1. And I actually just looked at his record while you were talking.
Mm.
This guy was in the top 50 in the world less than 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He then made the decision to jump out of the relatively shallow waters of the Japan Tour. And he said, no, I'm going to go worldwide. I'm going to actually play on world tours. And started playing on the European Tour. And I remember him very, very vividly coming fourth at the Dell Technologies match play pretty much 2 years ago,
yep.
2017. He then went to Wentworth and finished 3rd in the BMW PGA. And everyone's going, wow, this Japanese guy, he can play.
Mm-hmm.
He can play a lot. And since he's gone onto the main tour, his form, the European Tour, his form has been nowhere near it as it would be over on the Japan Tour. But he still shows glimpses. And it's interesting. Last year, 9th in the Spanish Open. He was 5th here last year in the Maybank. Fifth at the Porsche European Open in Germany. Sixth around those tight, fiddly confines of Crans-sur-Sierre. And he was third at the KLM Open.
Mm.
And he just showed a couple of weeks ago, he got into seventh spot going into Sunday at the Oman Open.
Yeah.
And if you look at his results on the Asian side of things, sixth in the Myanmar Open in 2010, I think that's Malaysia. Sixth and a ninth in Singapore at the Singapore Open 2016, 2017. And as I said, that aforementioned fifth at the Maybank last year. I think these kind of fiddly tracks suit him. It's Hideto Tanihara.
Yep.
Who I think there's far worse players in the field at 125-1, and he's just about starting to show something.
Yeah.
On the right course.
That effort in Oman was pretty strong, as you say. He was fifth for putting that week as well. So there was.
He's never going to be a greens in regulation monster. He's more of a short game player. But around here, I think that can be ultimately, that can be just as successful.
Yeah. I mean, again, just looking at my notes, it was his GIR which put me off going any further with him. But, you know, there's a case to be made, and you've just made a fairly strong one for him, given his record.
If he can make 70%, I know in his last out and he was at 70% GIR, if he can make something around that 70, 72, 75% greens in regulation, he won't be a million miles away.
No. And his short game can be, when he's playing well, his short game's good enough to compete around this kind of track. So,
exceptional.
Yeah, we shall see. Could be a good pick, Steve.
Valspar Championship on the PGA Tour. And Always the weakest of the events in Florida. And I think that's mainly because it's such a... You read player interviews. Oh, I didn't realise how good a course this was until I arrived.
Mm.
They all say it. And Charles Schwartzel said, I can't believe I've never played here before coming in and winning.
Yeah.
He said, it's an absolute monster of a golf course. And it isn't. It's in Florida. It's in Tampa or Harbor, not Harbor, Palm Harbor. But it's on the west coast of Florida. It's actually getting up towards Louisiana. It's right up on the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
Coast. But it's an inland golf course, and it's fairly long at 7-3. It's a par 71, but it isn't your atypical Florida golf course in any way, shape, or form. Lots of dog legs, lots of tree line fairways, water in play, but not the kind of water we see Siwoo Kim banging it 60 yards into the Great Lake. It's kind of the trenches that run down the side of fairways.
Yeah.
Lots of dog legs, lots of trees, lots of undulation, up, tees up in the air, down. It's not atypically Florida at all. It's more Carolina. And if we start talking Carolina golf courses, people say, what do you mean by that? Well, Carolina golf courses, clearly tree-lined, in the main tight off the tee. So think Harbour Town. Think Sedgefield Country Club, where they played a Wyndham. Clearly, Pinehurst Number 2 is probably the most famous of all Carolina golf courses, where they held the US Open 2015, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies if I got that wrong. It was either 14 or 15. I think it was 15. And, of course, you've got Quail Hollow as well to throw in the mix. Now, Quail Hollow is a beast of a golf course, but it is Carolina in its makeup. Pretty much very few straight holes, lots of holes where you've got to shape the ball. Basically, shape it's ball shapers. And that's where we're at. Now, the Copperhead course, it is a beast. It's an absolute beast of a golf course. If we're talking winning scores here, 10 under with Casey last year. Hadwin was 14 under. Schwartzel was 8 under. Jordan Spieth, 10 under. John Sendon, 7 under. Kevin Streelman, 10 under. So this won't be any 17, 18 under kind of job.
Yeah.
Adam Hadwin, there was no wind at all that year.
No.
He shot 14 under. I think Cantley was 13. If you're up in the 8s and the 9s, you're in the top 10.
It's a proper technical test, isn't it? You know,
yeah, it's tough.
Double figures and you're normally banging with a chance of actually getting the title, aren't you?
It's It's a slightly different format to what we usually see with a par 71 as well, because a typical par 71 would have three par 5s, but here you get four par 5s, which I think does make par 4, par 5 scoring important this week. And you also get five par 3s, I believe.
Yep, yeah, that's right, yeah. Adds up to 71.
Yep. So less par 4s, effectively. Yeah, it clearly has the snake pit, which is holes 16 through 18. They actually said, and Svartzel said this in an interview, which is on my preview, which clearly you can access via the description box. He said basically 17 is the real horror hole, where if you go right, you're into water. If you bail out left, you're into a big clump of trees. So he said it's double bogey in the water and it's bogey in the trees. You literally have one option, which is the fairway.
It's down the middle.
Yeah, when you got a player of Schwarzel's qualities telling you that, you sit up and listen. Mm. It ranked as the sixth hardest golf course on the PGA Tour last year at just almost a stroke over par on average. And the thing that also makes it difficult is that the fairways here are really, really thin.
Yeah.
So if I take the 300-yard mark for Bay Hill, which was 2 weeks ago, Rory McIlroy kind of heaven, 34 yards wide at 300 yards. Yeah? You take TPC Sawgrass last week. They were 32 yards wide. So again, so players like Rahm, players like DJ, players like Rory, they can be very aggressive off the tee. Here, 21 yards at 300 yards off the tee.
Yeah,
we're talking very thin fairways, which are surrounded by deep 3-inch rough.
It's noticeable. And again, going back to your preview where you've listed that, it's not the 300 yard mark is clearly important because of a lot of the drives going to end up around there. But every point along that measurement that you've put in there, it looks extremely tight. You know, it's a good kind of third to 50% narrower than a lot of the courses that we've played or seen over the last few weeks. So it's going to demand a strong level of accuracy to find those fairways.
Whether the penalty is that great is debatable, because we look at the tour statistics and whatever. Yeah. So if I go down the old traditional stats route, accuracy, greens and regulation, the stuff that the old farts like us used to use all the time. And if you're on the European tour, you have to. Driving distance for this tournament of the last nine winners averages out at 35th in the field of the winners.
Yeah.
So you can be long, you can be short, it makes no difference whatsoever around here. So Luke Donald, Jim Furyk can win, as can someone of the ilk of Gary Woodland. Driving accuracy averaged out at 39th. So actually, the penalty, Paul Casey was awful last year.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He was 70th in the field for fairway.
It was just that magic putter on the Sunday, wasn't it?
It was just a wrong Paul Casey performance. Mm. You'd expect him to be hitting plenty of fairways, metronomic on greens, which he wasn't, and
missing
putting
every putt,
like 1.9 putts per GIR. It was the complete role reverse, where he actually the flat stick was on fire. And he was scrambling like Billy Goat. He couldn't hit a fairway or green to save his life. Bizarre. But strange things happen at this tournament. And I think that's half the point, really. I'll go into that in a little bit more detail. The actual, the shortest skill averages, so the most important for this golf course, putting average at fifth. I mean, that is low across nine winners. The average putting average statistic of the winner was fifth.
Mm.
So you've got to have a hot flat stick, yeah? And also scrambling was far more important, or was more important than greens in regulation.
Yeah.
So you're going to be missing greens and you're going to be scrambling and having to putt well. The greens themselves are Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass, but they're overseeded again this week, just with Poa trivialists rather than with the bent grass, the velvet bent grass that we saw last week. And so they're overseeded greens, effectively. They're very, very similar greens to what you find at PGA West, where they play the Desert Classic or the old Humana Challenge, the old Bob Hope Classic.
Yep.
very, very similar greens. And actually, when you look at Adam Hadwin, who won this in 2017, we know that he's an absolute animal around PGA West. So there's something to throw in there. He's also done some good stuff at stuff like the John Deere Classic, which is another one that I like the look of in terms of a correlating course link.
Yeah, I can see that.
Totally different in terms of the green setups, which are bent grass there. But there's clearly something about that kind of shortish, neat and tidy kind of player.
Yeah, and that kind of bears itself out from the winners here, doesn't it? You know, if you've got the likes of Luke Donald on there.
Streelman.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got a decent record around the John Deere Classic because he's from Illinois, so that's like his home open, a bit like Zach Johnson, and he's got a couple of top tens there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where I'm at in terms of what I'm looking for. If you're looking at it from a strokes game perspective, you know, the new modern way of looking things, which I've started to use a hell of a lot more this season. Strokes gained skill averages over Paul Casey, Adam Hadwin and Charles Schwartzel, the last three winners. Strokes gained off the tee 50th, so that ties in. Doesn't matter. Strokes gained approach does, 4th. Strokes gained around the green, 17th. Strokes gained tee to green, 5th. Strokes gained putting, 10th. So what that effectively says is if you're getting the ball relatively close, you're going to have a hot time with the putter here. It isn't all about long putts, but strokes going tee to green and approach, very, very interesting. And I took a note from last year about this tournament. My note said, there were more than one sentence, but this is the one that I focused in on. If windy, greens in regulation, outing before is critical. And that, I've noted, even if there's just a single round where the wind is in effect, you need players that come into here confident that they're in lots of greens, effectively. And when I looked at the top four last year, bearing in mind we had Casey, Reed, Woods and Garcia, that is a very elite leaderboard. Mm. Casey was 12th for GIR in Mexico the previous week. He was 11th in my rolling GIR tracker. Tiger was 10th for great GIR at PJ National on his previous outing. And Sergio Garcia, lo and behold, was 5th in the rolling greens in regulation tracker this time last year. Now, let's fast forward to the weather this week. And it's actually changed since I put the preview out.
Okay.
It looks to me as if Thursday is now going to be quite windy. Anything up to 20 miles an hour.
Okay.
But it seems to actually affect the afternoon starters far more than the morning.
Mm.
So as I said to you off mic, first round leader bets this week, and I'm basing this on a forecast, so don't throw a load of abuse at me when it's wrong. But if this forecast is correct, you want a first round leader that's starting AM.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at first round leader winners here, Corey Connors last year, he was an AM starter. He was 200 to 1. Our old mate Jim Herman, if you're looking at military precision from tee to green and can't putt, it's Jim Herman. He shot 9 under around here in 2017. 9 under, that'd be a 62, wouldn't it? 125 to 1.
That shows you, doesn't it?
He was a morning starter.
That kind of player, again, you know, notwithstanding what Casey actually did on his final round last year, if you've got a player who is very strong from tee to green, who can just find that magical round or magical four rounds with the putter, they're going to be very, very strong here, aren't they? But yeah, for first round leader, that does kind of suggest that you could go down this kind of metronomic accuracy routes with a few players and just hope one of them catches fire with a flat stick.
It throws a few at me. I tell one player that came closest to me tipping, and I didn't tip, at a price, was Joel Damon.
Yep.
And Joel Damon at the moment is playing some fantastic golf. You can get out there and grab him right now, 150 to 1 for Joel Damon.
Mm.
Statistically, he's doing a lot of things that I want to see. He's killing par fives, which is not going to be a bad thing this week, because the par fives around here were the third or fourth hardest on tour last year.
Yeah, if you can make a score of them, it's going to set you in decent stead, isn't it?
So he's top 70 for bogey avoidance, like that. We don't want to be leaking oil around here. Par 5 birdie or better, he's 23rd. He can scramble out the rough. And he isn't the greatest of putters, but he's in the top 80 for kind of putting from 5 to 10 feet, which I think is an important distance this week. Mm. The thing that put me off Damon, and the reason I didn't tip him, was all of his results have been purely on bent grass. And even when you look at his web.com history, very, very little on Bermuda. He could be the kind of player that you'd go for at Houston in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
He's long enough, he's straight enough, and I don't ever think Houston's much of a putting contest. So, yeah, he's on my shortlist for Houston, as is our friend Johnny Vegas, who we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Vegas for Houston, I think, is going to be a very interesting proposition. But we're not talking Houston, we're talking Valspar. He came close to me for Damon. Jim Furyk came very, very close, because when he was first put up, Tommy Fleetwood was in the field and he was 50 to 1, Jim Furyk.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's a fantastic price. And then as soon as Fleetwood, the tweet came out, he's withdrawn, every bookmaker just slashed him straight to 33.
Yeah, and the market changed. It's a shame. That's a shame.
It is a shame. I'm actually leaving all of the top guys out of this. DJ, Jason Day, who I would take out of the top three. I would take Day over Rahm and Dustin Johnson this week, personally. DJ could win it, of course. He could win every week. But John Rahm, this kind of tournament, this kind of winning score doesn't fit for
me. Doesn't ring true, does it? I prefer Sergio over Rahm, I think.
I'd have Sergio. Sergio, of course. I'd have Sergio over Webb Simpson, who's next in the betting. Gary seems to have gone off the ball. Gary Woodland. Paul Casey, well, he's won once in 10 years, which was here in America. I certainly wouldn't have him winning, defending as low as 18 to 1, I could see, for Paul Casey. Wouldn't go anywhere near him.
No.
Patrick Reed is a course specialist. And that's the other thing here. You know, we're talking kind of neat and tidy. Patrick Reed is the antipathy of that. But because he's so good, such a great putter, such a great scrambler and such a great player of classical golf courses, he goes well around here every year. But 25 to 1 is available. Stenson at 40s, there's something in that. Louis Oosthuizen at 40s. Keegan Bradley's playing some great golf. Cannot putt. Mm. And then I came up to the first of my tips. I could not to resist Lucas Glover, who, after I actually put my tips out, Betfred eventually came out and they put him up at 45 to 1. I'm up at 40 to 1. With Betfair Sportsbook, eight places each way. But Glover, to me, you know how this golf betting works, don't you?
Yep.
You get someone that's hugely popular. Every tipster puts him up. He's the best thing since sliced bread. He's gonna play at the Players. He could even win it because it's that, yeah?
Yep.
This is the cut. And everyone's like, I'm never... that Lucas Glover...
Never going to touch him again.
Never going to back him again. And then he pops up again the week after. And I can just see a very serious case of week after itis with Glover. Because the fact of the matter is, the bloke is playing fantastic golf. I'm wondering, you know, last week, if he read some tips, as if golfers would ever read tips. But more importantly, he had a chance of a big week last week of getting into the top 64 for the World Match Play.
Yeah.
And Lucas doesn't, especially with his career of late, doesn't grab me as a guy that if you set him a goal, it ain't going to happen. Where if he kind of just rolls into a golf course willy-nilly, oh, I don't know how I'm going to play this week, boys, he can actually get some results. But he's just playing some outstanding stuff.
From what I've seen, his putting has been far improved. I mean... You know, we've all seen him miss some ridiculously short putts over his time, but you know, you get accustomed to seeing him putting around about the 1.9s, don't you, if you're looking at the raw putting average, and he's been a good tenth off of that. You know, a good tenth better than that, should I say, and that
brings results.
It does for
a guy of his high quality from tee to green.
Yeah, he's, you know, excellent tee to green. He's been performing very well around the greens. His scrambling has been excellent for some time as well. So
here you go, First for bogey avoidance, ninth for scoring average, ninth for scoring advice. And we're over a third into the PGA Tour.
Mm.
And he's in the top 10 for scoring average. 12th for scrambling from the rough, exactly what you just said. And even his putting, yes, it wasn't great. It was awful last week. But he's still in the top 75 for putts converted between 5 and 10 feet.
Yep.
If you'd have looked at that last year, it'd be 220.
Yeah, it's, you know, that it's a marked difference, isn't it? You know, for him to be in the top third rather than, you know, virtually rock bottom is a huge step in the right direction for him. And the, on the right track, he will win an event. He'll get over the line.
Yeah. So for me, he's a no-brainer. He's finished fourth here in the past. And if you're looking at, like, Carolina course form, he's fantastic around Quail Hollow. He's got decent results at Forest Oaks, Sedgefield. I mean, he's a US Open winner. He can grind. He's just in great nick. 12th at the Desert Classic, 7th at the Pebble Beach, 4th at the Honda Classic, and he was also in the top 10 at the Arnold Palmer. So actually, he was in. If I go to the other end, a player I was surprised I got a price on, so good. And I think a lot of this comes down to, we've been saying this for a while, a lot of these odds compilers are using the skill statistics, the strokes gain statistics to pull together odds as well as form and whatever,
yeah,
performances in certain states, certain courses. That's now in an algorithm, I believe. And if you look at Brian Harman's stats this year, they are absolutely dog-awful because he's been playing pathetically badly.
Mm.
And then last week, turns up at the Players, and all of a sudden he's a totally different player. He's actually a player that you actually expect Harman to be. The number that grabbed me was that he was in the top 15 for greens in regulation last week. So all of a sudden he's turning up this week knowing he can hit some greens. Yeah. But listen to these numbers, Paul. He was 13th for driving accuracy, 11th for greens in reg, ninth for ball striking, and he was second last week for all round in the strongest field of 2019. He only leaked 7 bogeys, which was exactly the same as Rory McIlroy, Jim Furyk, and our mate Joel Damon. Why didn't I tip Joel Damon? It's so obvious what's going to happen here, isn't it? Oh, man. Anyway, I just like Brian Harman this week. He's the sort. PGS, PGA West third, Riviera third, Colonial, 2 top tens, TPC River Highlands third and the sixth, Sedgefield third. He was in the top 50 in the world as of 12 months ago. He's had a poor run. He won the 2017 Wells Fargo at Eagle Point in Carolina, another Carolina golf course. In that particular tournament, he beat none other than Dustin Johnson and John Rahm.
Yeah, I remember it.
Shootout.
I remember it. Yeah, getting up.
So he's got the raw materials when he gets in a serious position.
Mm.
I just think 150-1 he was yesterday,
yeah,
with Unibet, 6 places each way. Just checking now, he's been backed off the boards. The best I'm seeing is 110-1. He's as short as 66s.
Yeah.
But Harman was too big. And I think a lot of that was because his stats are so bad. But the one stat that did jump out to me this week, 5 to 10 feet with the putter, top 10 in the cut.
He's always been an outstanding putter. If you said there's a bit of wind around as well, then he's a great wind.
There is, yeah.
Well, so.
As you know,
yeah,
there's wind. I didn't actually finish that wind synopsis, did I? There's also going to be wind on Friday, anything up to 15, 18 miles an hour, which is more than enough for this golf course.
Mm.
So for me, there's 2 days of wind, and even Sunday looks a bit breezy. So if you're looking for players who are great in the wind, go to our predictor model. There's a wind variable on there, and you will find Mr. Harman in the top 10 on our wind variable.
Yeah,
on the predictor model. He's a good wind
player. He is a good wind player.
Two more for me. I was surprised to see Brant Snedeker at 66-1, so I took that. 6th place each way, 50 odds with Unibet. They had some really good prices, Unibet. We keep saying this, but their prices were outstanding Monday. If you haven't got a Unibet account coming up to the Masters, you should seriously think about one, because there's going to be some players at big prices that are way out of kilter with Unibet. Mm. They always are. But Snedeker, Carolina golf course expert. We were on him last year at the Wyndham. Last week at the Players, First for greens in reg, ninth for strokes gained on approach, tenth for strokes gained around the green, sixth for strokes gained tee to green. I'm all over him.
Yeah, I like Snow.
He's changed coaches. He's left 2 weeks ago. He left Butch Harmon, and he's now back with his previous coach, Todd Anderson, who's actually based at TPC Sawgrass. So clearly, he's been doing a lot of work down in Florida on his swing, and all of a sudden, he says he's swinging less with the arms, more with the body, and he's been amazed how easily, all of a sudden, he's hitting fairways and greens. And anyone that knows, you know, Snedeker's short game is just world class. So I can see him going very well at 66s. And the other thing with Snedeker is, if you actually look at his record, either side of majors or WGCs where he's done well, he takes that form forward.
Yep. I know, I like Snedeker.
And actually, 66 to 1 for Branch Snedeker this week, I think, is a very good price. And I don't know if you realise, but Snedeker, let me just bring this up quickly on my screen. He's a 9-time PGA Tour winner, and he's at 66 to 1. It's just crazy in my mind.
And a tough test is...
How many times has Rafa Cabrera-Bello won on the PGA Tour? Well, he's 50 to 1.
Yeah.
Doesn't make it... some of these prices... I said to you earlier, it's like Webb Simpson. I can see him at 14 to 1. He's won once on the PGA Tour in the last 5.5 years.
Yeah.
Snedeker, though, 9-time winner. He's not scared of winning tournaments of a certain level. And this is right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah,
and a good, steady PGA Tour event.
And when it's a trickier test as well, I think he does come to. And another one is a great wind player. So you know, there's a combination of a lot of things to like about Snedeker. I do agree.
And the other one I went for was KK Kevin Kisner, 1.5 points each way, 50 to 1 again with Unibet, 6 places each way. I just thought 50 to 1 on Kisner, who's playing. He keeps showing. Keeps scoring very good rounds, gets into the mix and then falls away. But that won't continue to happen. 21st for bogey avoidance, 34th for scoring average. Great putter. And he's been 13th, 16th, 3rd and 8th for greens in regulation across 4 of his last 5 appearances. And that isn't Kevin's game.
No.
He's a putter. He's a scrambler. So when he's hitting that many greens, at some point that putter's going to get warm on Bermuda grass and he's going to fly.
Mm.
So yeah, Kisner. So Glover, Kisner, Snedeker and Brian Harmon. If you want 4 old boys from the southeast of America, good old boys, there's 4 there for you. Grown up on these kind of grasses. So I think it's a good assignment for all 4.
Mm. No, I can see it. I really do like Snedeker, I must say. He's one of the ones that I have backed.
Who are you on?
Aside from Snedeker, the only other one that I've backed so far is Ches Reavy. And
we chatted about him on the train the other week.
Yeah, we did. He strikes me similar to Jake McLeod in the way that he's been treated in the market, because he's 125 to 1 at the moment. And you know, that's off the back of a few indifferent performances, at decent levels. So, what's he finished? Yeah, missed the cut at the Genesis, 65th at the Mexico Championship, missed the cut last week. So, you know, his very immediate form looks a bit iffy. But then before that, 3rd in the Sony, 4th in the Phoenix Open. You know, going back to these weeks, he was silly short in the prices. You know, and you know, I think it's easy to get drawn into this very immediate form being absolutely critical and missing some of these players, because from tee to green, he's still outstanding. I think that's, you know, still going to be an element of this. He can putt when it all works. And you go back to the Sony Open, he finished 4th for putting that week. 1.61 putts per greens in regulation is very good for someone like Reavy. He's got 4 top 30 finishes here, 11th in 2011, and he was 13th going into the final round after a 65, 20th in 2012. Again, he was 7th going into the final round. So he's shown a little bit of, you know, ability around this track. 6th going into day one in 2013, 5th after day one in 2016. So I think if you round it all up, there's enough reason to think that he could perform here at 125.
Reevy last year, if you looked at all of his skill sets, he was all over them. And sure enough, every week you looked at Ches Reevy, his prices were crazily short here.
Mm-hmm.
This year, his numbers aren't nearly as good. And all of a sudden, you're getting great prices on him. So you see this about this thing about skill sets and numbers and statistics about games. That's definitely been built into prices.
Yeah.
But actually, look at his top 10 results. They're probably just as good as from last year.
Yep.
It's just that his stats aren't as good. And all of a sudden, you're getting really tasty prices about him. Yeah, he's interesting. I'll tell you another one I'll throw out there. Kung Hoon Lee.
Yeah.
200-1 I'm seeing. He was in the. Didn't he go out in the final round or something very close to the back at the Honda Classic, his last outing?
Yeah.
And he just hits greens for fun.
Oh, no, we mentioned him briefly, didn't we? In one of the podcasts a few weeks ago, because he was a silly short price and hadn't done a great deal on the.
Yeah,
on
that was PJs. Puerto Rico.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
But you get a tasty price about him nowadays. Down at that kind of level.
200-1 about him, seven places each way with Coral or Betfred right now.
Yeah.
And his tee to green game right now is some of the best you see on the whole tour.
Mm. And
slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah, talking tee to green, Roberto Castro's another one I've got a mark against, 250s.
Yeah.
And again, he's got a little.
He's done well around Quail Hollow in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, if you look, eighth for strokes gained approach for the season, despite not having any really standout form. So that's where his game is, and again, that's another stat that you highlighted quite heavily in the preview as well.
And Castro's a good one.
Yeah, Castro, Tommy Armour's another one who caught my eye. Danny Willett, who you mentioned a few weeks ago for this as well. Willett's not.
I
done
said
much
if
recently.
I didn't tip him up, shoot me.
We'll see where he finishes.
So Willett will pop, but he hasn't shown anything enough for me, unfortunately. But yeah, I could see Willett going well this week because this kind of grind is going to be right up his alley.
Yeah, there's a few of that kind of level. I might just have a couple of quid on just for a bit of interest.
A little tickle.
Well. Mm, indeed.
Keziah is showing better forms. I don't think Keziah though. He's more of a 22 under merchant than 8 under man, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Jason Duffner as well. Jason Duffner. He was 5th for greens in regulation last week. So as we always say, look for players once their true skill set starts to bed in. The rest of the game warms.
Yeah.
So Duffner's going to start showing soon. Whether it's this week, I can't tell you, but it's coming because he's just a GIR merchant.
What are we getting with Duffner? 200-1 for Duffner. Yes.
It's coming.
Tempting.
Right, I'm looking forward to this week's tournament.
Yeah, it should be good.
I think there's two very good, interesting betting heats across Malaysia and across the Valspar this week, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Can't wait.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, pleasure as always. Best of luck this week.
We've got the World Match Play next week.
We have. It's a double header on the
European. And the Corrales.
So. Yeah, I've got the Indian Open as well next week. So it's the.
Are you having a laugh? You've got two. You've got two next week.
Yeah.
And you told my missus that I could disappear to New York. You're a generous man. You are a generous. You didn't realise clearly when she asked the question.
Diary management is poor, isn't it?
That is poor, mate. You've got the Indian Open as well.
Yeah, the Indian Open, which starts Thursday. The Dell Match Play, which starts Wednesday. Now, we do have this challenge with the Match Play, don't we? With the pairings not being drawn until late on Monday evening, UK time. So the preview is going to be out on Tuesday next week, which makes the timings all a bit tight, but we'll work it out one way or the other.
So you'll go with India first?
India Monday, Match Play Tuesday, yes, that'll be the plan.
Okay. It's a feast of golf next week.
Indeed.
A feast. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
We will see you again next week for the Golf Betting System podcast. Enjoy your golf. Goodbye.